Cityville, if you don't know it, is one of the spiritual successors to Farmville.
I love Cityville. No, I don't. I'm being sarcastic. Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad podcast.
Hello.
that was hard to say. I'm your host, Will Wilson, and with me is Tracy Erickson.
And that's all who is with Will today. I'm the only one.
Yeah, and we're recording this actually on Thanksgiving, so even though you won't hear it on Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving, everyone who's in America.
So is that you? Are you thanking me and my country for leaving yours?
Yes. I don't know who I'm thanking with that. Well, you know, I don't know. It's a nice holiday. It's got turkey in, that's always good. And it's got lots of sales. Actually, I'm sneaking onto the news if I do this. Let's go straight to the news.
News!
Yeah, it's got lots of sales. And there's lots of sales on the iOS devices
lots
right now.
Of sales.
As in stupid amounts of sales. I mean, has this... thinking back, I mean, okay. It's moving so quickly, this area of gaming. Like 2008, there was barely anything there. 2009 was the breakout year, and then 2010, it seems like now everyone knows about this as a gaming device platform, which is kind of why I'm thinking this must be the biggest sale we've had so far, right? I mean, even though it's not
pretty close, yeah.
Because I mean, I can't remember any sales last year being quite as big. I'm pretty sure Christmas this year will beat it, but. Also, I have to say though, one of the commentators, a very cynical commentator on one of the stories earlier this week, did actually point out that it's quite a lot of the same games are on sale. And that is kind of true from the big ones. It's like the ones we can't sell.
Well, I think you know, the interesting point about the sales, you never see games like Angry Birds or Cut the Rope on sale, and there's a reason why, because they're already at 99 cents. Yeah. So maybe there's some logic in just going right to 99, you know, 59.99, 59p, and 99 cents, not 59.99. That would be ridiculous.
I'm pretty sure quite a lot of products here are priced at 59.99. It's cheaper than 60. Yeah, it's just tons of games. We're normally on a sales week, we would say our picks, or you'd get me to say a few of them, like last time when I had to write that article for like 3 hours.
Oh my gosh. It's hard, though, to pick. I mean, there's so many that it's like, you know, you've got some good ones like Monkey Island 2 for £1.19.
Yeah.
At $1.99, but it's like, you know, depending on how much money you have to spend, you know, you could buy that, maybe one other, a couple of others, but there's like easily 100 plus games that are on sale. So it's like hard to even decide, you know, do you buy Monkey Island 2 or do you buy, you know, Raven Sword, or do you buy,
Tetris again. You've already bought Tetris before.
Tetris is on sale?
Buy it again. It's always on sale. It's one of those games that always goes on sale. I don't think it actually ever goes up in price. I think EA just keeps sending us a list and saying, like, Tetris, yeah, it's on sale.
Well, we did. If you do want to consider some games that if you're eager to buy some games on the holiday weekend, or even if it's not a holiday weekend for you, you're eager to buy games before the glut of Christmas titles occurs in the next couple weeks. I did write a handy little 5 slice and dice iPhone games to celebrate Thanksgiving. I'll just let you know what those games are. And they're all cheap. Fruit Ninja, which is 59p, 99 cents. Slice It, which is also the same price. Amateur Surgeon, which just came out, is also 59p. Cut the Rope, which is a favorite of mine, and I know yours too. You like a lot as well, is on the list. And we actually have, we had news yesterday of a gravity pack, right? Or anti-gravity pack.
Yeah, 25 new levels. I haven't checked them out yet. I'm looking.
And the last one on the list is Samurai 2 Vengeance. That's the only one that isn't 59p. That one will set you back 179, but it's still a good deal. It's a good little game, and it's universal. A lot of these games are universals. Samurai 2, Slice It are both. Well, I guess two. That's not all, a lot of them, but those two are universal. So you really kind of, with Slice It for 59p, a universal, that's a really good deal.
Yeah, it is. There's and also everyone out there, we've got a roundup for all of the sales that we've had come into the office. So if you I think it's on the front page, it'll be under Black Friday sales. So we've got all of the like by maker, by price, links to all the reviews. It's basically a massive ongoing project, and so, you know, do check it out. It's got tons of games, tons and tons and tons of good games, and then it's also got Hybrid Eternal Whisper. Actually, Hybrid's not that bad, but that's the one I settled on. It's got a few duffers in there as well, so watch out. anyway, moving on from the sales, there's a new arrival to the Apple family this week. iOS 4.2 has arrived. It's staggered out across the world. It's not very important for you iPhone owners out there. I'm sure you're probably sitting there wondering why I'm so excited. But it is for iPad owners, because it's the first one to introduce multitasking, folders. It removes part of the functionality that we bought the iPads for. Thanks for that. And it also it removes the screen orientation lock switch. I really like that switch.
I know.
Why is it been removed? I'm going to get really confused now.
Yeah. Well, at least you still can lock the orientation. You just have to double tap the home
true,
key.
But I mean, like, the whole point of that lock in the first place is when you like go down, like lie in bed and stuff, like, you know, I'd prop yourself up and sort of like just just flip it around, lock it down, and then I can just sort of like, yeah, I want to get up now. I'm going to just carry it. Yeah, yeah. I'll probably turn into this voice. Yeah. But now I have to go double tap, scroll, press the button. And you see, that's not intuitive. What's going on? Why the hell is there a mute button as well? Out of all the things it could have been, tons of things.
Let me look here. I'm looking at the settings. I don't think there is a setting for it, but I'm just going to look. Because I would be great. I understand the 4.0, by switching that slider button to mute, it puts it in line with iPhone and iPod Touch. So I get that part, but I still don't like it. I still don't like it. So, you know, it'd be nice, you know, okay, give us the option to do that. You know, if people like that option, that's okay. But clearly it's software driven. So also give us the option to make that the screen orientation. Good. Lock button.
Pretty,
you know,
simple.
So we could switch that in the, you know, I'm looking at the general settings menu. I don't see an option. That would be great to have that option here, because you can customize the home key. You know, at least you can on an iPhone, where, you know, if you press it three times, what does it do? Does it bring up the iPod, you know, for playing music? Does it, you know, do whatever? So why can't you do that here?
I've got to be fair, though. The settings menu on iOS is a little confusing. I've never really liked it. I think they really need to sort that out, because it's worse than Android's, to be fair. And it's not quite... No. It's worse than Windows Phone 7 as well. Apple, sort that out. Your settings menu is a mess. Anyway, yeah. Also, I don't like the fact that multitasking doesn't tell you what's open and what's not open but has been opened recently. That's a minor bugbear of mine, because I like.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what happens is, if I've got a running task and I double tap the home button, it will come up on the taskbar and it will be there. But then so will another task, which I just opened, and another task. But I don't know if that's the open one, or if they're still open from when I opened them before, or whether, because I mean, on an iPad you're going to be doing more work based than on an iPhone. I mean, I'm just saying that generally. You're not going to be. it's not quite as easy to tell what's still running. Like, I didn't know YouTube was still running, because now it moves, because of the multitasking, Safari no longer has to close down and open up YouTube to when you click on a link. But I didn't know it was running, so it sucked up my battery while I was sleeping. You know, it's running in the background. It may be on standby, but it's still in the memory. So it was like, give me a little icon or something. So yes, so 4.2 is out. I do recommend it still if you've got an iPad, because, I mean, multitasking is pretty cool. And the folders are amazing. I know that sounds really dull, but my God, they're good.
And Game Center, finally.
Yeah, and Game Center. Anyway, I don't like Game... Actually, Game Center looks a bit weird on the iPad. Like, there's a lot of wasted space on the screen.
I'm not a huge Game Center fan either. I don't... You know, I think we've had this discussion before. I think OpenFaint is really kind of where the features are at. But, you know, at least it's something. I'm trying to be positive. At least having Game Center on there is something.
Yeah, I like how Game Center tells you if you're in the top 50% or if you're in the top 20%, or if you're me, in the top 1%. No, not really. Of the games players.
I agree. Actually, that is probably, now that you say it, you mentioned that, that is the one thing that it does better than any other social gaming network out there, is that it does tell you in what percentile you are on the leaderboards.
And it is kind of annoying seeing your friends come up and they say, like, top 23%, bottom 50%. It's like, oh, that's just damning, that is. I could be like 98th out of 100. Anyway, moving on. We're still going to talk about games, though. Because, oh no, actually, let's talk about the iPad a bit more. There are new rumors coming out which suggest that the iPad 2 is due in February 2011. I'm just going to warn you now, listeners, there's going to be a hell of a lot more rumors coming out that the iPad is released in X month in 2011. Because
in March 2011, in January 2011.
A source told us, an unnamed source told us that, an unnamed source told us, it's always an unnamed source. Just call it something, ketchup. But I don't care. Anyway,
a nameless Taiwanese manufacturer has released information on, you know.
Well, this latest one is DigiTimes, which is everyone's favorite iPad rumor site. Well, actually, it's not. It's really dull to read. Don't do it.
Well, let's have a moratorium on iPad 2 rumors. Listeners, it's coming. And let's leave it at that.
Yeah, it'll come.
It's coming.
It'll come in next year sometime, probably early. Probably earlier in the iPhone, maybe later. It will come at some point. Oh, dear.
Well, anyway. It's such a tizzy over, like, what's the screen size and what's this? And it's like, at the end of the day, does it really matter? Do the real specifications of the thing, like, are you going to be like, oh, well, it's only a 7.6-inch screen, and I was really holding out for a 7.8-inch screen, so I'm not going to get it.
To be fair, that's what all the competitors are hoping everyone's doing. But unfortunately, that hasn't. They've absolutely missed the boat, I think, with this, because I haven't heard any of the competitors having done any sales at all, really. I actually saw a Galaxy Tab outside of its prototype box the other day, which was a first, because I had only seen it with its prototype plastic stuff around it before.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it was horrible with the plastic stuff. It was like yellow. It was sort of like construction material, and it's about twice the size of the machine itself. I guess it was to stop people nicking it or something. I had no idea what it was for. But yeah, I haven't heard. I haven't heard amazing reports of it. Anyway, yes, iPad 2. It's going to come out at some point. So there we go. That's the breaking news. Final news story of the week is.
there it is. Breaking news. Next, right?
Yeah. Final news story is that ex-pandemic staff, they're the guys behind Mercenaries, aren't they?
Behind what?
Mercenaries,
yes. And Full Spectrum Warrior.
Full Spectrum Warrior.
And the Saboteur.
Oh, yeah, Saboteur.
And Star Wars Battlefront.
Oh, yeah. Battlefront. That was them. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, they did a lot of stuff.
Sorry, I had a momentary... You know, I own half those games. Anyway, sorry. Ex-pandemic stuff released a game, not for the Xbox, or for EA this week. on the App Store called Bullet Train, which is their way of getting back at their ex-employers, because essentially they were, the studio was dissolved, I think, completely by EA.
Yeah.
End of last year? Early this year? I think early this year, actually. Just after the Saboteur went on sale. Yeah.
I think it was like January.
Yeah. And and they're kind of annoyed with that, as you could probably imagine.
Obviously, yeah.
They're pretty successful. They're a very good development team, actually. And so they made a game, which effectively it's disguised, but you're effectively blasting EA. EA's Bullet Train. I think they've called them something else, though. What do they call them? They're they've actually called the organization behind the Bullet Train, which comes in and destroys things, Elaborate Acquisitions, which is which devises an elaborate scheme to buy, then sell, then buy again, then shut down a small company. I wonder what small company that could be. Anyway, you got to shoot things. It's an on-rail shooter. But it's quite interesting, though, because there was a report earlier in the year from Team Meat, who released their joke game basically as a protest against the App Store itself and what it represents, like the 59p games, which they hate. They did a joke app, which I don't think was particularly funny if you went and bought it, which was just basically Super Meat Boy, only it was like you could see what the high score would have been for that level, and that's it, basically. There wasn't actually any game. It was just like one screen, and you'd press a button, it would say the top high score for that screen. But that was it. And they'd sell that, and it was like meant to be a joke, like to get back at Apple. And this one's sort of, I didn't think it was funny.
I see what they're trying to do there, but...
Yeah, but...
A little too plain and esoteric to be funny.
Yeah, it's a bit esoteric, and also kind of the only people that are actually being taken for a ride there are the people that buy that.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of, you don't want to piss off. so, yeah, but there was that one, and there's this one with the Bullet Train going back to their old employers. Is the App Store, does this mean that the App Store is also going to be, is going to be a sort of subculture of experienced developers or developers from other consoles who basically want to just let off some steam? Getting into app development just so they can just because I mean, you wouldn't see a game like this or like Bullet Train
on PlayStation Network
on PlayStation Network, Xbox, anything like that, because they would just it wouldn't be either, it wouldn't be certified or they just wouldn't have the time and resources to give it justice, I guess. But you can put it on the smaller screen, you can do it like sell it for $199. Wow, that's quite expensive.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you never know. It might actually be a proper sort of good game. But the point is that it's still a small bite-sized game. So I don't know. Is there more opportunities there? Do you think we'll see more of this in the future?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think it's interesting that they decided to do it on iPhone and iPod Touch rather than do a PC game, or do a Flash game. And the reason why I say that is because, you have to, sure, it's cheap to make an iPhone game, but there are costs that are involved. Particularly, you have to pay $100 for the licensing fee and the SDK, and then you have to go through the approval process, and, you have to develop for a particular, iPhone has its own particular, considerations that you have to deal with, whereas PC has been around for years and years and years and years, and, doesn't require any licensing, doesn't require learning extra,
I guess,
snippets of code. But I guess their whole point is, trying to get it reach a particular audience. And I think if you are pretty miffed at a company as large as EA and they're doing really they're being really successful on the App Store, on iPhone and iPod Touch, then yeah, I guess why not? Although going with $199 and I mean, if the game is good, who cares? $199 for a good game is still cheap. But if the whole point is to be a kind of knock, I would have gone for 59p, 99 cents myself.
Yeah, it is a bit risky. I like the name of the company, of the developers, though.
Downsized games. Yeah, it's good.
Well, anyway, best of luck to the team behind it anyway. I think that's all the news. Wait. There is some rumblings going on. Like, I mean, we're going to be looking at a couple of these games in the very near future, and we're also going to be looking at another company's upcoming games in the very near future. But right now, I've got to say that Gameloft's Christmas lineup is looking damn good. Like, yeah. I think this is the strongest lineup they've put up. I'm really looking forward to a lot of these games. I mean, Asphalt 6, give or take. But however, they have said 42 licensed cars, and it does look good from the screenshots. But also, they've got the Nova 2, which looks really good. And that Uncharted clone called Shadow
Guardian.
Guardian. It's looking very good. This is a very strong sort of Christmas showing from the company.
Yeah, I'm interested to know. I had a meeting with Gameloft last week. Or no, I'm sorry. It was this week. Gosh, time flies really, really quickly during a holiday week. I had lunch with them on Monday. That's when I saw Nova. And it looks really good. It looks really good. And, you know, we were talking, and I said, gosh, you know, you guys put out some amazing content. You know, Spider-Man was fantastic. Modern Combat 2 was, you know, surprisingly stellar. And I said, you guys, you know, is this the result of specific studios working on these games? Because it seems like, you know, they do these really phenomenal games like Modern Combat 2, which just has this great multiplayer component, right? And then you get these other games that are like kind of okay. Like I wasn't a real big fan of Star Battalion, for example. I did not get into it. What was the other one? It was the survival horror game, the one, the kind of knockoff of Resident Evil 5. What was that called?
Oh, Zombie Infection.
Zombie Infection. Like, I didn't think that was all that good. You know, like, but then, and then it's like a total 180, and they release something like, you know, we're about to get Nova 2, for example. And it's just, you can tell that there's certain teams that really have some amazing talent in the company. I will say, after having played Nova 2, don't expect, you know, Nova was great because it was like we hadn't had this experience before on iPhone. You're not going to feel that way anymore with Nova 2. It's more, and I said this in the preview, it's more of a fulfilling of the promise of what Nova could be. So you've got better controls, better graphics, the multiplayer is fleshed out. Because it really, that was probably the greatest weakness I thought with the original Nova. It's just the multiplayer wasn't really there. It was pretty shallow. I didn't feel like it added much to the game. And so now they've kind of built that out. There's a whole ranking system. There's perks. There's unlockables. There's, you know, 5 different modes of play. I mean, there's an actual multiplayer game there. So, you know, I think, Unless Battlefield Bad Company 2, you know, can pull out all the stops and can manage some better graphics than what we've seen in the those first screenshots, I think it's fair to say that Nova 2 is probably going to be the shooter for the year. If not, then it's going to be Modern Combat 2. But, you know, that's pretty amazing to think that, you know, Gameloft has, you know, in the last 12 months, 2 of the best shooters on the platform. And then, like you said, that the Uncharted clone,
Shadow Guardian, yeah,
looks cool. Like,
I've got it up on my monitor like now. I actually looked for the title so I could then come in with Mitt going, yeah, confidently, Shadow Guardian. That's the name I remember now.
I mean, I got to take it with a grain of salt because Zombie Infection looked really great in screenshots.
That's true.
And it didn't look, it was not very good to, you know, it wasn't very fun to play. But same thing, you could say the same thing with Spider-Man. It looked really great in screenshots, but some, you know, you could have been like, it could have turned out really bad, but it ended up being really good. So I'm hoping it turns out good, because I love Uncharted. Oh my God. If anyone listening that has a PlayStation 3 and you have not played Uncharted, that, I think Uncharted 2 is probably the PS3 game. I mean, that is just a fantastic experience. You've got to go play it. But I'll agree with you about Asphalt 6. I'm kind of on the fence on that one. I was watching video of it, and I was like, it kind of looks like Asphalt 5. Like,
I think it's going to be blitzed by Real Racing 2. That's what I'm really looking
for. Oh, my God.
Racing game-wise, wow.
Can you believe that's coming out before Christmas? Isn't that amazing?
That is awesome. I hope it comes out on Christmas Eve, and then it feel like Christmas came early.
I emailed Fireman because they had sent a message saying, hey, we're going to release it before Christmas. I thought, oh, my God. How are you guys doing this? And I emailed him. She's like, we've been working on this for a very long time. So
yeah, they must have been working it from like mid-2008, I guess, because Flight Control was like a sort of side project. As far as I remember reading, it was a side project of theirs, and they must have been really sort of, I mean, it looks, they've only released a teaser trailer, but it looks great. And they've got the real cars in there. I noticed what is it? I always want to say a Dodge Charger. It's not a Dodge Charger. It's a Ford, but it's just a very similar looking sort of aggressive American car, which is in every single damn race, but it has that. And then it has like, and then 10 hours of campaign play. That means it's got a Gran Turismo style license system or something like that. Because there's no way you can get 10 hours out of a driving game unless it's got some sort of, you know, structured career mode going down.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first one had a structured career. I mean, I wasn't terribly hot on the way that it was structured, but, you know, it's a subjective thing. I mean, I think at least they had something, you know, because a lot of these racers, I mean, there was a racer I was playing. You know, the guys, 2XL, they've done a bunch of off-road racers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they are not very good about structuring their single player campaigns. And in fact, I think the first couple games that they released didn't have any structure at all. It was like, here's some tracks, play. So I mean, at least Real Racing had something. You know, it was there was some organization to it. The car that you're talking about is the 2010 Chevrolet Corvette C6R, and then the other car that's in the picture is a BMW Z4.
No, it's in the. No, wait. It's not either of those two, actually. It's not the picture. It's the. There was a teaser trailer. There's one car. Actually, hang on.
Oh, okay.
sorry, I'll edit this bit out. I like telling myself this so I know. But there's just one car that I can't.
In the gameplay or in the.
No, in the teaser. In the teaser. Oh, wait, there's a gameplay trailer. I never saw that. The pre-rendered one. It's a very aggressive car. It's like got. Oh, wow. I haven't seen the gameplay trailer before. This looks good.
Apparently, there was some complaints around the net about the gameplay footage being, like, people were not impressed with it. And I thought that was a little odd. I mean, I kind of understand it because it does look similar to Real Racing. But I will say to anybody who is criticizing the graphical quality of Real Racing 2, look at the cockpit. Look at all the gauges. You can see every gauge. You can see very clearly. That was not Real Racing. You know, you couldn't. The detail in the environments is much higher, and I think also performance-wise, it's gonna end up faring a lot better. So, you know, I anybody that's, you know, kind of criticizing the presentation, I think kind of you need to take it with a grain of salt.
Anyway, that's it for news. We've actually gone on for a very long time about news this week. I hope you haven't been. I hope you've been really excited throughout, actually. Anyway, we're going to travel down to the mine. The rumor mine.
Do we have to?
I'm afraid we do.
Rumor. Rumor.
So, yeah, we're down here. It stinks. And they're sending a capsule down here for us, but they said it's going to take a couple months. So
I smell mulled wine. I think the rumor miner's accidentally got the wrong week. He's quite early. I think he it's because he can't see any daylight. He doesn't know what the days are.
Is it Christmas around here, Free Parks yet?
I thought it was Christmas. There, I got you all turkey and all that.
Shut up, rumor miner. We're busy trying to record a podcast.
I'll just sit around in the corner here.
You made me do that.
He's such a. Anyway,
so Zynga is porting Cityville to iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. Cityville, if you don't know it, is one of the spiritual successors to Farmville.
I love Cityville. No, I don't. I'm being sarcastic.
So yeah, I mean, take it or leave it for whatever you. Whatever you think of it, but I don't feel like Farmville was as huge of a thing. It didn't make, I don't feel like it made as much of a splash as everybody was thinking it was going to when it was released, when that client was released for iPhone and iPod Touch.
But you see, you don't know, because on Facebook, it's really obvious when someone's been infected with Farmville, because they'll start like trying to spread it everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And the spores will come out and horrible. But
plant
on the
corn, I must plant corn. You could earn extra coins. I need more oil for my tractor.
Jesus.
So, yeah, but on the iPhone, you don't know if they're using it because you don't get your iPhone suddenly come up with a message saying,
your friend is playing Farmville now.
So it's...
Join him in reaping your harvest.
Reap what you have sowed.
That could be good. Someone should do like a zombie Farmville or something. Well, no, not zombies, but like horror Farmville where it's like totally demonic.
Your crops are ready.
That'd be good.
Although you sound like a Warcraft 3 orc.
Your crops are ready.
That was good. So, yeah. So, I mean, if you are really into Farmville, then this is definitely going to appeal to you. I am interested, just from a features standpoint, how they're going to handle this. You know, are they going to do, you know, kind of, I don't know. I'm interested, you know, to see, like, are they going to use Game Center? Are they going to, you know, do some... you know, unique things with the device itself. I mean, that to me will be interesting to see, but as in terms of the gameplay, I'm personally not into the social sort of like Farmville games.
I'm intrigued as to what they harvest in Cityville, actually, thinking about it. Frontierville, I can guess. Farmville, I can easily guess. Cityville, what do they harvest? Perfumes? Toys?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Anyway, on to real games. No, but on other games, we have another interesting Gameloft rumor. We've just talked about Gameloft and what we know is coming this year, but there's a game coming early next year that is going to please Driver fans. Driver San Francisco is heading to iPhone and iPod Touch sometime in February.
Awesome. They did the original drive, didn't they?
They ported that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was hard. It was a tough game.
Yeah, Spanner, our old buddy Spanner, reviewed it actually and said he rather enjoyed it. There were some control niggles apparently.
It's always had that even on the PC. I remember. I mean, you could turn. You'd be traveling down San Francisco and you'd be down the bottom of the hill and you'd turn. And then your car, because it's a massive, heavy one, it would turn, like, it would screech around, it'll hit bins, and it'll keep turning, and you'll be trying to turn it back, and it'll keep turning, and then you'll end up in Yucatan, and the Chinese border guards will be all over you.
Yeah, those cars are pretty, they're boats.
The yeah, essentially,
1970s,
yeah.
They're insane. I mean, there's, you watch them careen. I guess you don't really have those kind of cars in the UK. I mean, here you see them all the time here in the States.
70s cars in the UK are kind of like minis. Well, actually, they're 60s more.
But yeah, these things are huge, and they like float down the high, like they float down the road, and they like, you can get into it, and the suspension is such that they kind of like bounce a little bit. It's insane. But so yeah, I'm curious. I mean, because this is a new driver game rather than a port, so I'm interested to see how this turns out.
Well, that sounds good. I'm looking forward to that.
You're probably going to also look forward, as much as I am, to our final rumor, which is possibility of Japanese developer Level 5 planning an iPhone and iPod Touch role-playing game.
Is that the level 5 that did Professor Layton?
That would be correct. Professor Layton, and they did a PlayStation 2 RPG that was very good called Rogue Galaxy. And they've also done... Oh, and they all have also, they were the developer behind Dragon Quest IX, which was very, very, very popular on Nintendo DS. And they are working on White Knight Chronicles 2, which is a PS3 game, and they've got a bunch of other products. They're extremely successful, both commercially and critically. And if they're planning an iPod Touch game, that is something to sit up and take notice of. Wouldn't be terribly surprising, though, if you consider how much Square Enix has been pushing iPhone and iPod Touch. So they may be wanting to get in on some of that role-playing game action.
And yeah, they couldn't really do Professor Layton, I guess, because it's, you know, Nintendo, got the publishing rights, so not for that, I guess.
And, you know, quite honestly, I don't want, like... Some games I don't mind port. Some games I want ports of, like, I think, you know, like doing Secret of Mana, like Square Enix is doing, is a great idea because it's been so long since we've had that game. But to do ports, like, we have Professor Layton on DS. It wasn't that long ago. Like, I don't want it.
I know, but maybe there are some people on the iPhone who haven't played the DS version.
Fair enough. But we can all agree that we would like to see something new from them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's my point. We can all... you know, kind of come together around a new level 5 game. That would be great. I hope they do.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, all right. So on that happy note, we're going to leave the room miner in his little corner there, playing with a Rubik's Cube. Where did he get that from? From the 70s. Anyway, let's go to what we've been playing.
You go ahead and start.
I shall. I have been playing this week. I've been playing quite a few games. The one that I should have been playing a lot, I haven't played that as much as I should have. I played about 8 levels of it out of 40, and it looks quite good so far. Spirits, which is, it was released last week, I think, for the iPad only. It's very nice visually. It's beautiful, but it's very attractive game, and it's very well animated, and it's like a Lemmings sort of style puzzler. Each of your little things, which are leaves, which have been brought to life and flutter around, you can tap on them and select one of 5 powers. So like it's the sort of standard-ish Lemmings power. So it's like build a bridge, tunnel down and stuff like this, but it's done in very nice fashion. I would need to play it a bit more, to be fair, because I need to see if it goes anywhere, or if it gets harder, or if it gets, you know, these sort of things. So I can't really give judgment on it, but at the moment it looks very nice, and I will see how it goes a little bit later in the week. But what I've actually mainly been playing has been games that other people have reviewed, because I read the reviews and I liked the sound of them.
Oh, that's so great. I like hearing that. I mean, that's what the reviews are for. So, like, give it, yeah, tell us what you've been playing.
Been playing Harry Potter.
Okay, great. Okay, good. Let's talk about this, because I'm curious as to how you feel about it.
Okay, well, I've been playing on the iPad, because my iPod Touch 2G won't run it. I agree with you. I agree with the review, actually. I think it's a really good game. And I think it's huge. It's a massive game. It's like all the Lego games. They're just sort of, they're designed to put their fingers into your mind and then go ding onto the part of your brain which goes, I could come back here and collect that. And you end up sort of thinking to yourself, I could go back here. And it just keeps, it gets into you. Even for Harry Potter, technically, the first half of Harry Potter isn't actually very exciting for Lego.
No, you're not really doing very much.
It's like, done the spell. Okay. Good. Level complete. I was sort of thinking back to the start of Star Wars, the original trilogy, Lego Star Wars, this is. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, that had like blasters from the get off, and like this game's got you just walking to a room and you do a spell. So yeah. It's slow getting started, but I mean it's very good still. It's very well done. The controls, I mean, on the iPad it isn't as bad, but they're still annoying as hell, especially because the iPad, I mean, it's probably the same as on the iPhone, but it doesn't, sometimes it gets muddled up when you want to move the character like with your finger constantly, and when you just want to tap, and when you want to do the stupefy spell.
Yeah. Oh, I had the same problem.
Boom. Like that, and you're going, no, I want to collect the things. I just want to walk around so I can collect the things, not go boom. So, yeah. And then your finger gets in the way because you're moving them up. You're moving them up. And then you go, oh, crap, my arm. My arm's in the way of the book. It's like, pull off the arm.
It's even worse on iPhone and iPod.
Oh,
Touch.
I can imagine.
I mean, this was such a difficult game to review because those controls are just horrible. And I almost went with a 7. In fact, that when I was writing the review, that's what I was going to give it. I was saying 7. This is a 7. These controls are inexcusable. Because there's another thing that you may not have realized about the controls, but because you have to tap or slide your finger to move your character, and the magic spells are done via gestures, you cannot move and cast a spell at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, in the early levels, that's not a problem. But what about during a boss fight? What are you going to do?
Yeah, that is annoying, actually. I did have the boss fight with the troll. That was hard. That was the first hard bit of the game.
So I ultimately decided, well, the controls are annoying, but I'm still wanting to play. And that means that the gameplay itself is really good. And decided to kind of soften my rock heart and give it an 8. And I'm ultimately glad I did, because as soon as we posted that review, I got an email from I'll keep their anonymity, but I got an email from one of the developers saying that they really appreciated the review and that they were going to add a D-pad, and that they've actually added a note to the App Store listing for Harry Potter saying that they're going to add an analog stick. So, I think if I had given it a lower score, I think it might have been a little bit harder. I think it worked out because it's going to get updated. It'll have a, you know, control stick or a D-pad or whatever, and it'll make it so much better. So I'm eager for that update because I really would like to play more of it.
I have also been playing again on the iPad because you see it's the sales week. So I got distracted. I finally bought Reckless Racing. I have actually played that before, though. I played it at the EA months ago. And I still think it's really good. And also Hero of Sparta 2, because it was 59p on the iPad.
What do you think about that?
Better than Hero of Sparta 1. Because I played that recently on the N8, because I'm reviewing the Symbian 3 version. The Symbian 3 version is rubbish. You'd think, it's terrible. But anyway, the game itself wasn't particularly good either. Hero of Sparta 2, it seems all right. It seems quite fun.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
I don't think it's... I'm not particularly wowed by it. The intro movie's very good. I've got to commend Gameloft's animators for doing that looked really good. Unfortunately, it kind of made me think, god, this game looks really good, and then I went into the game and I sort of thought, it looks a bit like late 2009 Gameloft engine.
Yeah.
Sort of a bit like Zombie Infection. That was a bit disappointing, but I mean, it doesn't look, it's just not terrible. I don't know. The problem is, I'm going to compare these hack and slash games. Like, I think you said this actually, rather hard to do on these sort of systems. You either have to go all out and completely blow people away, or you're not going to come out of it looking that great. That's what I've been playing this week. Tracy.
Well, I also was playing Harry Potter, and I agree with everything that you say. I also have been playing. I talked about it last week. Sentinel 3, the tower defense game. I'll talk a little bit more about that because it's coming out tomorrow on the 26th. So I still highly recommend it. I'm in the process of finishing the review and have gotten further into the game. It's still lots of depth. You can upgrade. You have a mech that you can upgrade using experience points that you earn as you defeat waves in each of the 20 campaign levels. You get to unlock special abilities that are distinct from your mechanized defender. And these involve like sending a barrage of missiles down to the alien homeworld, because that's where you're fighting. You're fighting on this alien planet. So you can send a barrage of missiles, or my favorite is this sort of like area, this damage area orb where you set it down and it stays on the field of play for a minute, for 60 seconds. And anything that walks in its sort of red aura basically gets killed. So it's like your Hail Mary kill all creatures sort of pass. It's really great. And then you unlock the turrets themselves, the towers. And then what's really kind of interesting, and I'm still kind of conflicted on how I feel about it, is you use credits to purchase additional slots for towers. So you start off with like two or three slots. And that's fine because you only start off with two towers. And then you acquire new towers, but in order to have them on your deck in a level, you have to unlock a slot. So I don't know how quite I feel about that. I do like the concept of having to choose which towers you take into battle. You know, saying, okay, we've got 10 different towers, but you can only take 5 or 6 into battle. I like that. I think that's good. But I'm not sure I like having to purchase the slots, because I feel you could, particularly because there's so much other stuff to buy, you could really back yourself up into a corner, because these purchases are irreversible. So if you accidentally were, you know, to purchase a power up for your mech defender, you may end up screwing yourself in terms of what towers you can take with you into a level. So that is an area that I don't like. The other thing I'm having a little bit of difficulty with is the level of difficulty. It's ramps up rather sharply in some levels, and it's one of the things I don't like about tower defense in the sense that they can be designed in such a way that if you place one tower incorrectly or you're off one space, the level, you're screwed. And I'm starting to see a little bit of that creep into the latter, into the second half of the game. And that's a little disappointing to me, because the first half is so well polished and tuned and challenging, but not difficult. I mean, I literally have been stuck on the same level for the last 2 days. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is like, why? You know, this was so good. I want to have to retry levels. That's good. But I think at the point that you get more than 5 or 6 attempts at something, it starts to become irritating. And that's sort of my rule of thumb for all games. If you're in an action game, you know, if you were playing, you know, Hero of Sparta 2, and you tried beating a boss 5 times, that 6th and 7th time that you try beating him, you're going to start to get annoyed. So that's...
I get annoyed after 2.
Yeah, so...
I expect myself to be a bit better than that.
So we'll see. I'm still thinking. I have had a score in mind for the last week as I've been playing it, but I'm not going to share that because I have not finished the review and I'm not finalized, but... rest assured, I still recommend it. It's very, very good game. And quickly before we leave, I want to talk about another game that's coming out on the 2nd of December. It's called Scarlet and the Spark of Life. It is an point-and-click adventure game that is being put out by a team called Launching Pad Games. And it's pretty good. It's very much in the style of like Broken Sword. It's very campy, really sharp dialogue, but built specifically for iPhone. It's got a wonderful visual style. It looks as though it's been hand-drawn. It's really clever. And what I like about it is it's got this female protagonist, and she's a princess that's essentially been kidnapped. So you have to basically, but she's not like your ordinary princess, you know, that's, you know, kind of girly, and she kind of has a mouth to her. So she's an interesting character, and she meets some pretty funny, you know, unusual people during the journey. And it's just, I really like it. I need to play more of it before, you know, kind of finalizing the verdict. But I think it's one of those rare surprises. It just kind of came out of nowhere, and I think people are going to like it.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm going to check that out. I'm a big point and click fan.
Oh, yeah, you'll definitely like that.
I have to say as well, I just want to put this one in. I have been, because I've been traveling quite a bit this week, going back and forth between London and where I live, which people could probably guess if they Googled it, if they really cared. I've also been playing Harbour Master a lot on the iPhone. I got to say, I do like Harbour Master a lot. It's really weird. It's a game where I feel like I'm really good. Like, I'm not actually really good at it, but it's just strange on the iPhone, not more so than the iPad. When you've got two of your thumbs moving at the same time or tracing in different boats. I don't know, I like it. Anyway, that's the other game I was playing. Anyway, before we go, we do have a question.
Great.
It's from Chris, who left a comment on the previous story. And of course, if you want your question read out, then please do leave a comment on the previous story or this story that you're listening to right now. And then we will read it out next week because, you know, we're good like that. And also, there's only ever normally one question, so you're pretty much guaranteed to be read out. okay, let me just find it. iOS title updates seem to have more say on influencing game content than, say, patches of console games. And he's did the example, which is very good because it has been patched recently. Sorry, guys, I didn't tell you about that. I bought the Stunt Car Racer ripoff Fumes. Well, not ripoff, it's inspired by Fumes on release, for example, and was disappointed. But after an update, it's much improved with much better graphics and frame rates and the like. That's true. Do you ever go back to a game just because of an update? And do you think it's worth re-reviewing updated games when they differ largely from the original offerings? That's a sort of double-part question. Do you want to start answering this one, or do you want me to tackle it first?
Yeah, I'll tackle the second part of that question, because this question has been raised before, and it was a question that we had debated in the month leading up to the launch of the App Store in 2008. The concept of updates fixing flaws in an existing game is something that is a positive trend. I mean, it's really great that developers can do that. The concern, however, that I have as a reviews editor is that is by saying we will re-review games that have received updates, substantial updates. The problem with that is that gives license to developers to ship games that are incomplete. You know, Fumes is a great example, and I agree with you, Chris. It's a great example of a game that launches. It's horrible. I mean, Fumes was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
It was horrible. And they've released an update, and now it's decent. But that's sort of the issue there. It went from horrible to decent. It didn't go from 4 to a 9, you know. So that would be number one. The updates rarely cause enough of a shift in a game where it actually becomes recommendable. Two is developers need to understand, like with any product, they need to ship something of quality. They need to ship something that's completed. And if there are features missing from the game, that's not a reviewer's fault or the consumer's fault. That's the developer's fault. And to say that we're going to re-review a game that then gets updated to fix flaws because the game development was incomplete, that's giving them a pass, and I really don't believe in that. There's also, third, the dynamics of the way iPhone and iPod and iPad games, you know, are sold. You know, these games come out and they have a very limited, there's so much content that's coming out, there's so many games coming out that you know, it really is. Each game has a very small window in which, you know, they get the public's attention. So if a game comes out and you are not providing the best possible game experience that your team can provide, then, you know, why should we take a second look at the game? You know, it was in the case of Fumes, Stunt Racer, game was really bad. So, you know, it's hard for me to say, well, then, yeah, we'll go ahead and take a look at this game again. You know, it's also a time thing. You know, there are literally, we get 20 to 30 review requests a day. And we only review two or three games a day. And we review more games than anybody. So we're only reviewing 10% of the games that we see. So if we are to spend time going back and re-reviewing games that have been updated, we won't be able to tell you, as a avid iPhone gamer, about the new stuff that is worth your time. So it was a decision that we made very early on that we would not re-review games, that we would essentially treat updates similar to the way PC patches are considered, in that they're not considered. You know, we do our best to communicate when there are substantial updates to games through news stories, but we really feel strongly about reviews as being a final verdict that is essentially, you know, set in stone, irreversible. And, you know, it's both a time. So in short, it's both a time issue for us. We want to be able to talk about as many games as possible. And it's also a matter of, you know, saying you've got to make the best game possible and have that on day one. And if you do, you get rewarded with a great review. And if you don't, then you get penalized with a negative review.
It's basically the same as, like, any time you've been in college, school, university and stuff, and you hand in work, and then it comes back and you get, like, I don't know, a second or a B, or I don't know what the scoring system is in America. But then, and then you go and look at the mark and then go, right, okay, I'll change that section, I'll change that, and you hand it back in again. So, and then you'll get another mark. That doesn't happen. you give in the work when, you know, and see what or how it go happens. If the work's bad, then, you know, you can't expect us then go back and then do it every single time. So, although I'm not suggesting that we're all schoolmasters / tutors / lecturers, etc. I'm just using that as a real life example. Or in fact, even if you just work anywhere in your workplace and you go into a meeting and you say something really stupid and everyone looks at you and goes like, what the hell are you talking, you're fired. But then you go back out of the door and then come back in again and go, actually, you know what, why don't we do this? And everyone goes, wow, yes, no, actually, you're right. And then they don't, you're fired.
You said, I mean, it's a good question though, and I think, I mean, Chris has a point in the sense that there are, in extremely rare circumstances, a game where it would be like the updated version might have been a point more. But, you know, there's also another concern, like if we start shifting review scores, you know, it essentially means that the scores don't mean anything. Yeah. Because then you know, let's say GameLoft, you know, Asphalt 5 got an 8. They could come to us a month later and say, like, well, we updated it. Is this now a 9? You know, so it makes, so rather than having that sort of sliding scale, you know, by saying the score that you're given with the version of the game that is available on the day that the review is published, and sticking to that, gives the review a lot of weight. And yeah, some people have been pissed. I mean, we got an email from the developer of Fumes, Stunt Racer, you know, saying, why did we get such a low score? You know, and having to explain, well, you know, there's some problems with the game. You know, we would really encourage you to fix those. So, you know, by doing that, you know, if we had scored the game in a way and said, we will do this if you fix these things, who knows if they would have even worked as hard or as fast on updating the game.
And also, as Tracy did mention, We do work our socks off trying to just cover new games coming out, and even then we can't cover them all. So yeah,
we miss so much.
Covering old games on top of that would be like a nightmare.
But Chris, I would say this: you know, if there's an update to a game and we haven't posted something about it, feel free to email us or post a comment somewhere. And you know, you're our readers, you're our listeners. We want to make sure that you guys are informed and that you come back to the site and are seeing the stuff that you want to know about. So if there's a game that we haven't covered, whether it's an update to an existing game that we have reviewed or a game that we haven't talked about at all, let us know. Like we're definitely listening and we're definitely open to suggestions.
Oh, no, wait, there was another part of that. Do you ever come back to a game just because of an update? Yeah, I'd say so. If it's a game I enjoy, I do. Sorry. we answered the second half of your question, then just completely ignored the first. Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, Tilt to Live was one that I did come back to after they put the first Code Red. I think Code Red, yeah. Mode in. And that was good. And Super Hook Champ, I think. Or what was it called? Was that the actual name though? I'm trying to remember.
Super quick hook.
Super quick hook. I also went back to when they updated it. I mean there's
Mecha Wars. I had a multiplayer update. I went back to that.
I joined it a bit late, so I went into it with the multiplayer update. Pac-Man. Going free for the challenges and stuff. I went in for that. Damn right. Pac-Man Championship Edition is one of my favorite games. If it's a game I really enjoy, I definitely would. We'll try and post news of any really, really excellent games that we really enjoy and if they get updated on the site. Minigore as well. It's another good one. Anyway. Yeah, so that's it for the questions for this week.
Good question, Chris.
Yeah, it was a good question, Chris. Good question, Chris. And now we have a question from Kevin, who did the question the other week as well. He's a regular questionnaire.
Hey, Kevin.
Kevin K4 writes, what do you guys think Apple need to do to improve the gaming side of the iOS devices? Aside from hardware things, although their only attempt at it so far was Game Center, and that was, well, you know, yeah. Very well put. Actually, you know what? I'm starting to see a few apps take into, like Flight Control HD. I just downloaded it now, the update. We were just talking about it, and it made me boot up Flight Control again because it's a real-time multiplayer of a Game Center with friend invites. That's cool.
That is
now,
really
not
cool.
Many games support that yet. And I mean, that's not directly an Apple thing they could do to improve the gaming side, but real time, like Game Center with real time multiplayer, would actually start pulling up against OpenFaint in my mind. More game support.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, I'd absolutely agree. Yeah, it just needs that. Game Center is not forever lost. I mean, they just need to really update the crap out of it. You know, they've got there needs to be an easier way of getting friends. There needs to be integration with Twitter. There needs to be real time, more of a push to do the multiplayer stuff. There needs to be here's a simple one that they could do. This is the easiest thing that they could do is they need to actually have a gamer score. Because
yeah,
right now
it's just achievements.
You're just earning achievements, but you don't have a score. And those achievements have a point value, but they're not actually added up. So
I mean, has Microsoft like patented it or something? Because I mean, PlayStation doesn't have one either, does it? It has trophies. It doesn't have actual points.
Okay. As far as I know, I think Microsoft does have a patent on the game, like, or a trademark on gamer score. So I don't think Apple can use gamer score, but they can have a point total because OpenFaint does, and so does
iScore. Well, also, but it says aside from hardware things. So I guess. Not just Game Center, though. What other ways? I mean, what other software solutions could there be for games? I don't think they really need anything more than Game Center. Game Center could be very good. It could be the solution, but it's just not there. And as Tracy says, needs a hell of a lot of updates to get it there. But there's never say never. as James Bond never said.
Gosh, other than hardware, I actually think the hardware is really damn good. The Game Center, obviously, I think they've, you know, from where we started in 2008 and where Apple is now in terms of games is a huge difference. You know,
Game Chat.
That'd be good.
Just brainstorming now.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I think it would be interesting for them to have some sort of first-party publishing structure. And if not that, then at least, you know, bring in, you know, provide, not necessarily do internal development, game development, but do sort of second-party game development where they say, hey, they contract out to developers and they publish their titles.
Hopefully that's answered the question. Thank you very much again for asking a question, Kevin.
Yeah,
you've been very consistent and another good question. And of course, as before, Chris, very good question. But after all that, we have got to go because Tracy's got to enjoy turkey for Thanksgiving. And I'm going to enjoy mixing the podcast until midnight. So I hope everyone's really glad. Ho, 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 or whatever the...
Well, have a glass of wine, enjoy the mixing, and we will talk with you listeners next week.
Yes, next Friday you'll see us on the website, same place, same time, probably. Maybe we'll have Ben back, maybe we'll have JJ, who knows? But anyway, I've been Will Wilson, thank you very much for listening.
And I've been Tracy Erickson.